All right, outdoors today. Outdoors today. I think it's part 14. Concluding part of this long series about Mark Curtis's book, published by Serpent's Tail, 2010-2012. This book I found by seeing it mentioned in, I think it was an article by John Pilger. So, good example of somewhat under the radar word of mouth. A few things about the book I want to share before looking at my summary notes. It's been a while since I read it, but let's see, it's 377 pages plus the introduction, and then it's it goes up to 445 with footnotes, so that shows you how heavily documented it is, which to me is a tip of the hat, because it's, you know, someone spent the time to do a thorough, you know, not that it's perfect, but they overall a thorough researched investigation of a topic, and they backed it up with quotes and info and such like. Now, the other thing I'm going to praise about this book is that the writing style, I don't know if I've ever said this about a book, but it's rather Taoist, meaning that the writer is kind of, he is written very well, and considering that it's about so much information and history and names and dates and typical stuff that could be quite boring, and he doesn't write with a lot of amazing flair. Like, I learned a lot about Latin America history from Galeano's book Open Veins of Latin America, and he writes, you know, with astounding flair. So this book is very sort of simply written, but yet just, I don't know how to describe it, just the way it all flows together in easy reading. I mean, it's, you know, each chapter is there's a lot to it, a lot of info, it's intense stuff, but it flows along nicely. And that's what I mean by Taoist. Curtis kind of stays out of the picture. It's not so much about his experience or his opinion. He's just, you know, once in a while he throws in a comment. He's just kind of giving the info and letting you know what's going on. And so, you know, again, considering all the info and history, it reads like I haven't read John le Carré novels and such like, but it reads like a real life spy thriller, and probably some of those spy thrillers are based on this kind of stuff. And now that other book I read recently, I don't think I've done a show on it, The Looting Machine. The author's name at the moment's escaping me. Anyway, that's another book packed with info, but that has a little bit more of a, you know, travel flair. He goes around, he meets various people, he does character profiles, so it's a little more of a flair to it. So again, this just to describe the style of the book. And all right, some of the things I noted, as mentioned previously, energy security is one of the biggest phrases I took away from this book. That virtually, you know, everything and years, decades ahead in the planning of infrastructure and whatever goes into the, you know, whatever goes into this stuff, it has to do with energy security in areas where there are typically, as Pepe Escobar likes to say, the pipeline stands. So yeah, some of the notes I have here: modus operandi, resources and strategy for staying in power, and deals for not attacking being attacked. So that was explained in some other shows. You know, they make deals with people to avoid being attacked, or, you know, don't attack this person and we'll do this for you, that kind of stuff. Here I have my note. Oh yeah, the writing style, brilliantly unassuming. If I had read my notes, I could have been conciser. Brilliantly unassuming, sort of like humbly noble of Taoist philosophy. And oil and gas, again, the oil and natural gas being major areas, major resources. Paul Craig Roberts in a recent article was highlighting Lebanon as a site of water being a major deal going on there, protection or trying to get the water. Latin America, there's that Guarani aquifer that I think the Bushes bought up in 1990s or something. So, you know, around the globe, there's these, whether it's water, oil, natural gas, some of the most, oil and gas, that are the most prominent. There's another snippet, going back to the beginning of the book with the imperial divide and rule, officially proclaimed in 1932, and to a large extent a British creation, Saudi Arabia would go on to act as the world's main propagator of fundamentalist Islam, providing the ideological and financial center of global jihadism. Indeed, Saudi Wahhabism has been described as the founding ideology of modern jihad. Britain has succeeded in achieving its goal of a divided Middle East and a ring of client states out of the ashes of the Ottoman Empire. Yeah, that's a while ago. I mean, that's like 85 years ago or so, and you see the book paints the history, the inception of a lot of this stuff, even going a little bit farther back, I think, and really helps to go forward and explain, you know, now what's going on with Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, the squabbles with the Shia and the Sunni, all kinds of stuff that is just some of the dominant themes of what's in the news nowadays. So this book, as Elon Paps did with Palestine and Israel, is another heavily footnoted book. Again, a tip of the hat to these scholarly types who can sustain that effort for such a long, you know, length of a book. A great service to you know, the world and information, and I suppose if you want to call it literariness or whatever. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep last night, so some of the words are jumbled. Let's see, I'm just going to read some things that I wrote in the back of the book. Just some of the things that stood out at me. The overall themes that a lot of the wars and the finagling has to do with countering nationalist forces that challenge hegemony. Again, it's all about for energy resources and the banking. Extremists may not necessarily have been created by Britain, but they've contributed to and used. They have used Britain, and Britain has contributed to and used them. Post-Turkey, Ottoman, Britain use Arabia for oil and buffer against Russia. And that was another key aspect, the quote communist force coming out of Russia. That was part of the whole 1980s Afghanistan deal and the training of the Mujahideen, which is kind of the inception of a lot of the modern stuff that the world's dealing with. And support for Arabia, yet there's a lot of power trips. And I have a note, a la corporate Indians. So you get, you know, some of these leaders, they get power tripped and they get into positions of power. And Britain propped sultans, etc., for resources and to quell free people movements. British divide and rule, Muslim and Hindu, oil and control popular movements. That's another recurring theme of, you know, nationalist forces that are more secular and popular movements. One of the roots of jihadists is Islamic with military rule. And the Anglo-Iranian oil company BP. And that's a chunk of history there. Let's see, blueprint, modus operandi. And also this tying in with Syria. What's going on in Syria today? Yeah, I'll read a couple of bits about the blueprint. Britain's preference for repressive regimes backed by the Islamic right rather than more popular or democratic governments, just that kind of thing. So you get this right, extremist, fundamentalist, jihadist, whatever the labels one puts on it, they are tending to be factions of people that are, I guess, in a sense, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but in a sense, a minority. So here's the paragraph about the blueprint. The preferred plan carried out in coordination with the Iraqi, Jordanian, and Lebanese intelligence services, again aimed at stirring up the tribes on the Syria-Iraq border and also the Druze community in the south of the country, as well as utilizing Syrian MI6 agents working inside the Ba'ath Party. The plan read, quote, CIA is prepared and SIS, Secret Intelligence Service, or MI6, will attempt to mount minor sabotage and coup de main incidents within Syria, working through contacts with individuals, end quote. Also, quote, CIA and SIS should use their capabilities in both the psychological and action fields to augment tension in Jordan, Iraq, and Lebanon. The plan also incorporated another typical feature of British agitation, violent false flag operations, blame for which would be pinned on official enemies, which had proved successful in removing Mujahideen from power in Iran. Thus, staged frontier incidents and border clashes would provide a pretext for Iraqi and Jordanian military intervention. Syria had, quote, to be made to appear as the sponsor of plots, sabotage, and violence directed against neighboring governments, end quote. This meant operations taking the form of sabotage, national conspiracies, and various strong arm activities to be blamed on Damascus. And then the military bases for strategic reasons, Empire Oil. Again, that's also mentioned in the Base Nation book by David Vine and other books along those lines. The whole strategizing of where to have military bases. Again, Islam over Marxism, another empire motivation. And quoting from the book, allied to radical Islam to achieve its foreign policy goals. So it's kind of like, you know, you have somebody has a goal in mind and then they, you know, they want to use somebody to get to that goal. And so when the using is the you know, first of all, using, but that's sort of the premise of this friend-enemy revolving door where they're using people for specific purposes, and then when that purpose is up, it's sort of like the disposable culture metaphor in the geopolitical structure. So that's another big takeaway I got from this book. That sort of ongoing, you know, the names change, the places change, the country names rotate or shift, but ever is the attempt for, you know, the resources and the control of who's in charge and, you know, who's monitoring, who's protecting the resources, the whole infrastructure that goes with it, and all the shenanigans that goes with that. And other areas of this book that opened my eyes to the Balkans, which I had knew little about. London, the amount of stuff going on in London that, you know, after the recent attacks, sad as they are, on the heels of reading this book, and, you know, the blowback effect, it certainly seems... certainly seems there. And the other thing is on a linguistic level, you know, some of the quotes of the powers that be, you know, presenting their spiels to the public, and, you know, once getting a bit of this info, it's much easier to not just read between their lines, but to see the just fluff, the bullshit fluff that they spout. Now it sounds good, but, you know, if you don't consider what they're actually saying, or what the real chessboard, what's happening on the actual chessboard, what people are being affected, and that kind of thing. Another big learning too was the Saudi Arabia banking, the exchange for weapons, Britain supplying weapons, and then Saudi getting in money from their oil, and what to do with their money, and using the British bank. So you get this whole systemic cluster F structure that just is horrible, and the effects, like, you know, here's a quote, despite billions of dollars in aid located to Afghanistan in recent years, development is meager as a third of the population goes hungry and 73% have no access to safe drinking water. So, you know, where one puts one's energy You know, it's easy to rant about this stuff, but the people getting basic necessities such as water, that may be a place for the turning points, as we are seeing in the U.S. In Standing Rock and other places recently. Some kind of oil something was stopped with on the Hudson. So there are some victories, and I think if we look to these victories and to see the surge of people power is one way, and also to, you know, waking up to, not buying into the system, the nasty system that is portrayed in this book. Another quote here with stability here is understood as ongoing British-Saudi opposition to democracy in the region and the long-standing British backing of Saudi Arabia's role of superpower on the Arabian Peninsula to ward off threats to continued feudal rule. So yeah, that's where the Orwellian language comes in. The stability is understood as ongoing opposition to democracy. And that gets into the whole what's going on in Yemen as one of the current Saudi places. But supposedly the Saudis are dealing with questionableness and oil revenues, and so there's a lot in flux. And you can look up Mark Curtis online, and a few more videos of him giving some talks. Very intelligent, interesting guy. Still see an occasional article from him online, not as prevalent as some of the other authors. But anyway, so thanks again for hanging in there for this long series, learning a bit about how the stuff works and how to get around it or overcome it. I don't know if you can overthrow it, but it's overcome it. And stay tuned. Not sure what the next show is gonna be yet. We have an interview lined up, so we'll keep you posted. And be well and have a good one.